Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Ann Leary is the wife of actor and comedian Dennis Leary, but that's not the reason we're going to talk to her today. We just wanted to put that out there right at the top and get it out of the way so we can focus on the real reason we're talking to her, which is Ann Leary has written an interesting, dark, and funny novel set in the fictitious town of Wendover, somewhere on the North Shore.
It's called The Good House, and it tells the story of Hildy Good, 60 years old, smart, intuitive, and an alcoholic in deep, deep denial about her sickness. She's also a descendant of one of the Salem witches and possesses some of her own witch-like powers of intuition and understanding.
Hildy Good knows pretty much everything about everyone in town, especially about Rebecca McAllister, a beautiful young mother who has newly arrived in town with a deep secret of her own. Hildy and Rebecca become close friends, confidants, and the story takes off.
It's about small-town life in New England, deep secrets, and the deep pleasures of drinking. Drinking with others, but most especially, drinking alone. For protagonist Hildy Good, that means drinking at home in the evenings when she can slip serenely into herself.
Early in the book, Hildy tells the reader about one night alone on her terrace and says, "By the time I had poured the last of the bottle into my glass, I was fully transformed. I was myself again." The Good House is Ann Leary's second novel. She's also written a memoir, and she joins us now. And Ann, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you.
I had so much fun this weekend getting through a lot of this novel. So,
oh, that's great.
So I'm really happy to talk to you. I'd love to start, if you could just read the opening two paragraphs there on page one, because it just sets up a couple of nice ideas that get played out throughout the book.
Sure. Okay. "I can walk through a house once and know more about its occupants than a psychiatrist could after a year of sessions. I remember joking about this one evening with Peter Newbold, the shrink who rents the office upstairs from mine. 'The next time you get a new patient,' I offered, 'I'll sneak to their house for a walkthrough. While you jot down notes about their history, dreams, whatever, I'll shine a flashlight into the attic, open a few cupboards, and have a peek at the bedrooms. Later, when we compare notes, I'll have the clearer picture of the person's mental health, guaranteed.' I was teasing the doctor, of course, but I've been selling houses since he was in primary school, and I stand by my theory."
Great theory. And I understand it's a theory, and this sort of idea behind this theory is something based on a real experience you had, right?
Yes, it is, actually. Yeah. Yeah, so a few years back, my husband and I were interested in a property in our community that was coming on the market, and it was really in a state of disarray. I knew the people who had owned the house. They were no longer there. I knew that the people had issues, but I didn't really know, you know, quite what was wrong with them. But they had hoarding was one of them, animal hoarding. So I was walking through with a contractor to decide whether we might be able to fix the house up. And when we came out for a breath of fresh air, which we needed to do several times, I said, "What do you think is wrong with these people?" They weren't there, obviously. And he said, without even pausing, "They're alcoholics." Hmm. And I said, "Oh, so do you know them?" And he said, "No, I don't know them, but I've been doing this for 30 years, and I can walk through a house once and know more about the people that live in it than a psychiatrist could after a year of sessions." So that's what became the first line of my book. I stole it from him because it was fascinating to me that he had this skill.
Hmm. What did you like about that? I mean, what fascinated you about that skill?
Well, I think that we do, our homes do say a lot about us. The way we choose to live is a little informative about the type of people we are. And I think that's why some people, especially women, get a little stressed out when company is coming over.
Got to clean it up.
Yes.
Hide the traces of who we really are.
Exactly. Exactly. And kind of put on this appearance. And so that intrigued me. But I was also I was already working on this novel, and I was trying to come up with I had a different kind of narrative voice. I had I didn't have the narrator that I have now, Hildy Good, who is now the main character of the novel. Mm. But I decided I wanted somebody in real estate, somebody who knew a lot about the people in the town, a townie, if you will. And it kind of triggered this idea that the person who might tell the story would be a person who has access to homes, who can learn a lot about the community by the sort of the nests that the people live in. And that is who became the narrator, Hildy Good.
Hildy Good. Well, I want to ask you more about her. As you say, she works in real estate, and that's, I guess that's one of the reasons she has this sort of intuitive understanding about so many people. But she's also descended from a real Salem witch, or someone who was accused of being a witch. She's a serious alcoholic. Tell us how she ended up as the hero of the story. You said that she wasn't, that you didn't imagine at the beginning that she was going to be the protagonist, but she becomes the narrator of the story.
Right. Well, so originally the story was supposed to be about the psychiatrist and his patient who he has an affair with, about the scandal in the small town. I did want the town set on the North Shore of Boston. It's an area I moved to when I was 14 from the Midwest. Before that, we had moved every couple of years. In various parts of the country, but mostly in the Midwest. And when we moved to Marblehead, it was quite a culture shock for me. It was a little bit different. There's a lot of character in Marblehead. And it was the first time I really found myself surrounded by people who were all kind of from that place. Probably not all of them were, but many of my friends had grown up in the town, as had their parents and grandparents. And I really envied them this sense of you know, connection to the community and their history with the community. And I wanted to be like them. I felt, you know, when you're a teenager, all you want is to belong and to feel accepted. And for some reason, I thought if you were from a place and had this history, you would automatically feel that. I know it's not true now because I have friends who did grow up in towns and say they don't feel that. But I did imagine that. And I really, you know, wanted to be a townie, to have a place that, you know, I was had that kind of connection to. So I really wanted to write about that. And I also now live in a small New England town in another part of New England, northwestern Connecticut, but it's a very small town. And again, I'm not a townie, but I have a lot of good friends who are from there and descend back many generations. So,
Did that represent something really different from where you grew up in the Midwest? I mean, this close association with these small towns, is that something that's particularly of this region of New England?
Well, I can only speak from my experience, but yeah. I mean, it's also the towns we lived in probably weren't representative of all the places in the Midwest.
Yeah.
But, for example, when we lived in Racine, Wisconsin, my dad worked for Johnson Wax, and many, many people in Racine, Wisconsin worked for Johnson Wax. Before that, we lived in Midland, Michigan. A large population of Midland works for Dow Chemical Company. It's kind of these towns were sort of centered around industries. Mm-hmm. And Marblehead is sort of centered around this wonderful history. You know, that was fascinating to me. When we moved or whenever we traveled when we were kids, my parents always had us read a lot about where we were going. So I had read a bit about it before we even went. And, of course, you know, the history of Marblehead and most of the North Shore is full of things kids think are fascinating, like, you know, pirates and witches and, you know. So I was pretty intrigued by the area.
Well, I'd love to dig a little bit into your central character, Hildy Good. She's a real estate agent, as we mentioned. She's divorced. She has two grown daughters, and she has a secret. She's a recovering alcoholic. And her relationship with alcohol is a big theme throughout the novel. And I'm wondering, there's a great passage on page 23, right in the middle, and I'd love you to read that, and then we can chat a little bit about this theme.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to set it up a little by saying that, you know, Hildy's grown daughters staged an intervention for her and sent her off to Hazelden, which is a rehab in Minnesota. And Hildy doesn't believe she has a drinking problem. She was quite blindsided by this. She's a very successful real estate broker. So she now, back from Hazelden, doesn't drink amongst others. She has non-alcoholic beverages, and so that she's just returning home from a party where, you know, she had her little soda and then came home. And now I'll read the passage.
Great.
I've developed quite a taste for California wine. I don't know why I so rarely drank it before. I felt wine gave me a worse hangover than vodka. But now I try not to overdo it. I try, but in all honesty, sometimes I don't remember going to bed at night. So what? I'd like to go back to Hazelden and bring that up in group one day. It might make for an interesting discussion. Is a blackout really a blackout if nobody is there to see it? Not even yourself? I say no. It's like the tree falling in the woods. Who cares? But most nights, I just have a few glasses. I've come to love my nightly party of one. I've no need to go out with others, all the bothersome others with their judgments and their quick looks between them. Stolen pleasures are always more thrilling than those come by honestly. It's what I imagine makes adulterous love affairs so exciting, having a wickedness concealed between one's everyday mantle of goodness. Anyway, I'm not completely alone with my wine, since my dogs are always there too, and sometimes, if it's a warm night and there's a moon, I undress on the patio and walk down to the river where the dogs and I go for a swim. Now I sit on the patio with my wine and my dogs, and after my second or third glass, I'm finally, blissfully at home.
There's a lot of integrity in the way you describe this, and I know you've been through this situation yourself. So, I mean, this part of Hildy's life rings very true to you.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I stopped drinking when I was very young. I was 24, living in Boston, and I didn't drink for 14 years. And but, you know, we moved a few times, and our life circumstances changed, and things were going pretty well. And I kind of started to wonder if I hadn't jumped the gun a little bit. Maybe, you know, I stopped drinking because I was a little out of control. And when I lived here in Boston, nobody who knew me questioned why I stopped. Everyone agreed it was a very good idea. But, you know, by the time, you know, years later, nobody had ever seen me drunk. And when I would tell people, all my friends knew I didn't drink. But when I told them why, they thought, or they would say, well, I was wild when I was younger, but, you know, I kind of grew out of it. And so I started to wonder if that was the case for me. And I did start to try to become a social drinker. And I would go out with friends and have a glass of wine or two. But immediately when I started drinking again, I do consider myself an alcoholic. And I certainly, once I have a glass of wine or two or a drink or two, it's really hard for me to stop. I really, you know, don't have the off button. It's like a full throttle. So what I did, though, because I did want to continue, I did a lot of secret drinking. So I would go have my glass of wine or two with friends, and then I'd go home, you know, the kids would be in bed, and then I would put away a bottle by myself. And I did this pretty regularly, and it seemed like a nice solution. And I liked it. I liked drinking by myself, and I didn't always remember going to bed at night. And now I don't drink anymore. I stopped 6 years ago. It wasn't working. It was something
I
tried.
But were you like Hildy? Did you have that sense of sort of finally, blissfully at home, alone with your bottle? I mean, she makes it sound sort of delicious.
Yeah, no. I mean, I definitely feel that I was born three drinks short of comfortable. and so was Hildy, you know. Mm. So it does feel, you know, it did feel quite, I did feel quite whole when I drank. It felt nice. And like Hildy, it was something I really like to indulge in. Kids are off on a sleepover, husband out of town, just me and the dogs. Really nice. That was my idea of a great evening.
Well, Hildy's relationship with alcohol, I mean, it's complicated and interesting. And this idea of the intervention that her daughters stage for her.
Right.
I love the way you sort of, I mean, she's a complicated character, and there's something so human about her, because she goes through with the intervention. Clearly the daughters want to help her, but her attitude about this isn't, my daughters saved me. It's like, oh God, this is such a pain, you know, that they made me go through this.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, Hildy is outraged, and she feels betrayed. And, you know, this is true. I have had friends who have had interventions done on or for them by family members, and some of them say it saved their lives, and others, you know, it didn't really work. I mean, the truth is that Hildy was doing fine as far as she was concerned. She was successful in the town and functioning very well. She was completely blindsided by this intervention. So she feels horribly betrayed. And, you know, she does have denial, which all alcoholics have. So she really didn't see herself the way others saw her. She didn't allow herself to. So my challenge as the writer was to write a book about an alcoholic in denial from the alcoholic's point of view.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because then you're really stuck in this situation about how trustworthy she is.
Right.
I mean, she's a terrific narrator, and I'm really interested in what she says, but I know she's in denial, so you're sort of wondering, well, what do we really know about what's going on here?
Well, I wanted the reader to wonder if her daughters were, you know, a bit over the top when they had the intervention and, you know, and sympathize with Hildy a little at the beginning and maybe wonder if, you know, she wasn't, you know, it wasn't unfair that she was sent off. And, you know, that was the thing. When you have an unreliable narrator, you still need the reader to believe her to a certain extent. And, you know, the truth is, if you have an alcoholic in your family or if you know an alcoholic, they usually are pretty reliable. They're often great workers, and you know, but they're not reliable when it comes to themselves. They're not often telling the truth when it comes to themselves because they're not even telling the truth to themselves. Yeah. And so this book really is more, it's a book about, you know, Hildy's relationship with her family, with this love interest she has, her community, but ultimately it's kind of her relationship with the truth, which is probably the hardest thing for her to come to terms with.
Yeah, and sticking with this theme about drinking and Hildy's drinking, I mean, one of the things that you express so well is just how difficult drinking is to give up, because in some ways, and you don't really pull any punches with Hildy, it can really be a great thing. I mean, it helps her sometimes in ways. There's this great, I think it's the Thanksgiving scene where she's coming to this dinner and she's really in kind of a bad way. But as she drinks, she begins to like the people better. She has a better time. She's a better person.
Yeah, Hildy's not a mean drunk. She, you know, she is, when she's sober, she actually doesn't suffer fools gladly. And she's a great, I love her character. She's a real New England Yankee. She's a little bit, you know, quite, I don't know. You know, I don't want to say stern, but not that easily impressed by people. But she is very much softens when she has one drink. She likes you better after one drink. She actually will quite love you after two or three drinks, and after 4 years, kind of peeling her off of you. And I think we all know people like that. And so she, the Thanksgiving scene, she comes, she's in a bad mood, she arrives, she's not allowed to drink, it's all her family, and you know, she softens up after, you know, she does sneak a couple drinks, and then she tells herself, you know, this is better for everybody. It's not just better for me, it's better for everyone when I drink. And so, you know, like many people with drinking or substance abuse problems, you know, it does work for her to a certain extent. And, you know, I think, you know, it's funny because most of my friends drink, and, you know, I know for everybody, alcohol makes us feel smarter and funnier, and it works for everybody to a certain extent. It's just that for the alcoholic, they often feel that they must have that they can't, you know, quite, you know, that it improves them tremendously.
Anne Leary, there's so many elements of this story that are obviously drawn from your life. I'm just curious if, I mean, did you think, and I know you've written a memoir, but did you come close to doing another memoir? Was it a question of, do I want to do a memoir or do I want to do a novel?
No, I never thought I'd do a memoir. You know, I don't have a great drinking. I'm so, you know, like I said, I, you know, tried to drink again, drank a little too much at home. There's nothing sensational about my own story or interesting, really. And this book, like I said, it didn't start out to be about an alcoholic at all. It was supposed to be about this scandal. Once I made Hildy the narrator, I really understood her character better than I did the others. I know a lot of Hildys. There's a little Hildy in me. And every time I would go to tell, to, you know, to sit down to write and tell this other story, she kept kind of butting in with her own story about her town and her history and how she doesn't really have, you know, protesting about this, she doesn't really have a drinking problem. So I finally decided, okay, you know, fine, it's your book. And it is. And the other story, that's a subplot and it's there, but it really is. It ended up being Hildy's story. But Hildy is very different than me. But I do know she was informed by people I know and actually quite love.
Well, the book is The Good House. It's a great read. Anne Leary is the author. And should tell listeners it's already on the New York Times bestseller list. So congratulations for that.
Thank you so much.
Maybe a movie one day soon. So Anne Leary, author of The Good House, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. And I'm going to be at the Brookline Booksmith on
Wednesday
night.
I was just going to say that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
I stepped
fine.
On your line.
No. Brookline Booksmith Wednesday night. And there's a lot more information on our website, radioboston.org.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.